The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1053. It's the 27th of April, 2018. On the podcast today, oh, before I get into that, listen, I've got to give a little plug for a cracking series we've started here. You'd think I would say that, but I just genuinely think there are some excellent guests on our new podcast series called Business Lives, and you can find out more about that at voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. That's the obviously the address there, and it's just chatting to people who are quite prominent in the world of business, and so, you know, quite inspirational, really. Check it out. voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. Okay, on the podcast today, George Roach, Chief Executive Officer of Premier African Minerals, PREM, provides an update on the business. Just give us a call, say, can I come on? Okay, also on the podcast today, I have Market Analyst for Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talking about companies releasing updates next week, including Apple, pretty much the biggest company in the world. Over here, Sainsbury's, SBRY, and International Consolidated Airlines, of course, and British Airways and all that, IAG, ticker there. Plus, I also have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. A very important metric, this. And people only follow companies for a couple of reasons. One, because they're doing more research on the company and they may be going to buy that company, or they've just joined the Vox Markets platform and they want to receive notifications. So it's worth keeping an eye on this top five list to see companies that regularly appear in there, because you find generally it does have a positive effect on the share price. More people following, more people probably buying, more people sharing the story. So worth keeping an eye on that list. Of course, do your own research. Nothing on this podcast is investment advice. I also have, as always, the top five most liked RNSs released today or in the last 24 hours.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is George Roach, CEO of Premier African Minerals. That's PREM. George, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you, Justin. It's always great to talk to you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you recently did your stint over in the UK Investor Show, and you said there's had lots of questions for investors, so you'd like to come on and address those questions and give a general update as to what's going on. So we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, for people listening who are not familiar with the company, George, can you explain what Premier African Minerals is all about, please?
Premier African Minerals develops and explores natural resources, primarily in Zimbabwe. Our two principal projects, although not the only ones, are the Zulu Lithium project in Zimbabwe, which is ready to go into DFS, and the RHA Tungsten mine, which is ready to come back into production when we resolve the current ownership issues with the Zimbabwean government.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent. Well, let's go into that. Let's start with, start with either RHA or Zulu. Which one to start with, Joe? Give us an update.
Well, I think let me talk about Zulu Lithium first. It's a particularly exciting project, we are at a point where we've said publicly that there are ongoing negotiations with several parties. We are, and I'm happy to say that those negotiations are, as far as I'm concerned, going well. We are at a point of discussing and negotiating term sheets. There is no agreement that is signed and concluded with Premier at the moment. My personal preference in terms of agreement is that what I would like to see is an incoming party takes a position in our subsidiary that owns the lithium deposit, invest sufficient into that subsidiary to cover the full cost of the additional drilling and all the DFS work and test work associated with that, which is expected to take approximately 12 months from initiation date, which could be at any moment, and that in acquiring an interest in Zulu, there would also be a further payment that would be made to Premier, which would allow Premier to achieve a level of funding itself. So that's my personal preference in terms of deal. As I say, there is no deal that is final yet, but there are term sheets that are under discussion and under negotiation right now. We remain very excited on this project. Our test work gave us some very, very good results. The initial scoping study showed this to be a particularly robust project. We have a lot of interest from various potential takeoff partners for this. And I think that the future is exciting for Zulu Lithium as soon as we're able to conclude this negotiation we are busy with at the moment.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, let's swap over to RHA. What's happening there, George?
Well, RHA, we suspended at the end of last year. We suspended it for a number of reasons, but I think that the most topical is that the policy of 51% indigenized ownership in Zimbabwe has been relaxed. And we have made a proposal to our shareholder partner in RHA Tungsten Zimbabwe, which was the Indigenization Economic Empowerment Fund, to the effect that we would capitalize a component or our loans to the company in exchange for an adjustment to the equity. And we are looking to have that equity increased from 49 to 90%. The Indigenization Economic Empowerment Fund has supported that, and it has really been a case of waiting for the promulgation of the change, which was done, and then going through the process of the Zimbabwean government finally signing off on the proposed changes to the shareholders' agreement. There's been assurances given to us by the Minister of Mines and various other ministries that this was a work in progress, but there has been some confusion as to which ministry would finally make the sign-off. Recently, the decision was taken in Zimbabwe that as to which ministry it would be. We've had discussions with that ministry, with the executive people within the ministry, and we're assured that, again, it's a work in progress. But I think the important point with this is that I am not the Zimbabwean government. I cannot sign this off. And Premier continues on almost a daily basis to do whatever it is that we can to remain in the forefront of this with the people concerned who need to sign it off. So confident we are, assured, assurances we've been given, but I can't sign this myself. So I await that still.
Yeah, and obviously, is there no sort of indication as to how long this will take, George?
Well, the Minister of Mines gave me a personal indication when I met him the last time I met him, which is probably 4 or 5 weeks ago. I can't remember exactly when it was. And the expectation that I had when I walked out of that office was that it would happen the following week. What actually happened is that at that time, the indecision as to which ministry would have to deal with this issue arose again. And the Mines Department was unable to deal with it. So that's the kind of issue that has been ongoing. We have assurances it's being looked at, and it's being looked at right away. But again, I can only repeat myself again and again, I can't make that decision, and I can't make that signature.
Yeah, okay. And currently, George, as far as funding is concerned, How is that looking?
Well, Premier can't raise any equity at this point without shareholder consent. We do not have headroom. So, you know, any speculation that Premier is imminently in the next sort of week or two going to run off and raise additional funds through placement of shares is just it's nothing more than impossible. As I say, there is nothing that Premier can do or at this stage would do without going back to our shareholders in general meeting, setting out in detail the full proposals on RHA, Zulu, and so on. And whatever our plans are going forward would then be subject to shareholder approval.
Marvelous stuff. Okay, George, well, listen, if someone is listening to this right now and is not following the story but would like to do so, give them three quick reasons to convince them why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Number one, imminent settlement of the equity situation at RHA. Number two, and it's as strong and important as number one, finalization of an agreement on Zulu Lithium. And number three, finalization of an agreement on Zulu Lithium. I don't need to go any further than those two. I think they are both exceptionally significant, and I believe that they could be defining moments in Premier African Minerals.
Mm-hmm. Well, George, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
I certainly hope so. Thank you indeed.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, market analyst at Spreadex. All right, Connor?
Very good, thank you.
And Connor covers, I'm obviously talking to listener here, Connor, as it's odd to say your name. But if you've not heard the podcast before, Connor chats about some of the bigger companies releasing news this week. So Connor, who is first up?
Yeah, we're going sort of as big as you can get, really. First up, Apple on Tuesday. It's their second quarter figures on Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's had a bit of a... Well, it started off the year fairly well. I think it hit an all-time high of $183 in February. But since then, it's taken a bit of a knock. And I think it's now at, what, $164? You know, lost around $20 in the last couple of months. Its first quarter figures in February, that sort of helped propel it to an all-time high. Very strong. I think even though iPhone sales missed estimates and fell the year on year, they come in at like just over 77 million units sold, it still saw a 12.7% jump in revenue, I think, to a record $88.3 billion, which is an absurd amount of money to make in a single quarter. And that was like nearly $1 billion higher than what had been expected. And especially also beat forecasts. That was at like $3.89. So really strong figures. However, since then, you've had sort of reports come out saying leaked reports coming out saying that the iPhone X is basically dead, that they're looking to cancel that phone after one generation of it, basically. You know, they seem to have made a mistake in releasing that and the iPhone 8 at the same time.
Yeah.
And people have just, you know, plumped for the cheaper option because there's no massive benefit of having that more expensive version of the smartphone.
Yeah, apart from me, do you know what, I went to the iPhone X, but do you know what I couldn't do, and it's just a user problem. I always have a problem, I don't know if you've got an iPhone, but you can use it with your fingerprint to open it, and I found that very touch and go. If your finger's a little bit, you know, moist or hot, or it doesn't seem to work. But with the iPhone X, they've got eyeball recognition. That is spot on. Literally,
really?
A couple of yards, even in the dark, it works.
Well, that's
about it.
That was the feature that sort of caused so much concern last year, because it sort of delayed the production of the iPhone X.
Yeah.
It caused like supply concerns and stuff about it. So that, I think that was the feature that had people... You know, because throughout 2017, there was these constant reports that, Apple aren't selling as many iPhones, there's going to be a big drop, and it still managed to climb across the year despite those fears and despite iPhone sales slowing down somewhat. But yeah, so the iPhone X looks like it's dead. I think there's also concerns that with each generation now, there is a smaller increase in the relative quality between each generation of smartphones. So people are going to start holding on to their smartphones for longer. which means each sort of new iPhone might become a bit less of an event if all that is you know, a slight tweak to the camera, or broadly like non-essential updates like that iPhone, that the eye recognition technology. So I think that's an issue not only for Apple but for the smartphone sector as a whole, but obviously that really severely impacts Apple. In terms of its figures heading into the second quarter, I think it's still expected to sell like 53 million units over the first quarter, which is roughly a 4% increase on the same quarter the year previous. I think the company itself has said revenue is expected to come in between $60 billion and $62 billion, which are the midpoints of 15% increase year on year. Though that was down on like the 65.8 estimate analysts had been expecting when it announced that target back in February. I think margins are also a bit of an issue. I think they're expected to come in between 38% and 38.5%, again lower than the 38.9% target analysts had been expecting back in February. In terms of our clients, I think this is the first time in a while that it's just all one-way traffic with Apple selling the stock around the $164 mark, even though it's fallen a fair bit since its February highs. Our clients do clearly seem concerned about the state of the company heading into the second quarter and are looking for it to drop, I guess, you know, back below the 160 mark following the results on Tuesday night.
Yeah, well, you know what, you're right about smartphones. They're going to have to find some other way to monetize on there. I mean, because at the end of the day, like I said, when they first came out, they were revolutionary. And now it is a little bit of a change to the camera. My camera is excellent there, but I mean, you know, how much better can it get? It's like little tiny little iterations of improvement. And
I feel like,
you know,
battery is like the last big thing. You know, beyond some like unforeseen huge improvement that is unbeknownst to the likes of me, who aren't like some tech god. But beyond like seriously improving battery life and stuff like that, I'm not quite sure what. Yeah, for the next couple of years, maybe at least, Apple might find itself with, you know, aesthetic and very minor, you know, upgrades to the camera and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is an issue for it.
Yeah, marvellous. Okay, what's next? Sainsbury's, is it?
Sainsbury's full year figures on Wednesday. It sort of had a bit of a turbulent, it sort of, every time it's, for the first few months of the year, every time it got back to £2.60, it would then immediately retreat. And I think at one point, towards the end of March, it was at 4-month lows. It hit £2.25. However, since the very end of March and across basically all of April, it's been remarkably strong. I think it's up 17.5% since the end of March. So 17.5% basically in the space of a month, which is a really, really aggressive climb. Given that its figures were decent, its third quarter figures were decent back in January, but they weren't anything particularly special, even within the supermarket sector. I think total sales are up 1.2%, which is fine. Like-for-like sales for the third quarter are up 1.1%, which is better. But that is still somewhere between, I think, for the company's first quarter, they were up 2.3%, the second quarter, they were up 0.6%. So it's sort of just, you know, a bit below the mid-range of that, between the, you know, kind of the difference between the first and second quarter. The CEO, however, was very keen for investors not to get away, to get carried away with any of the positive growth. It warned that the supermarket was operating in a challenging market, said that there'd been a, you know, the squeeze on disposable income meant that customers were, you know, whenever they were able to defer purchases, that's what they were doing. Obviously, since then, there's been a slight improvement. You know, inflation seems to be in retreat. Wage growth seems to be picking up again. Real wages, more importantly, seem to be picking up again. So that could be, you know, I think investors are going to be interested in what kind of outlook Sainsbury's gives for its upcoming financial year. As for the one that's just been, I think back in January, it did say that its full year underlying pre-tax profit would be moderately ahead of estimates. I think the estimates stood at £559 million. However, I don't think the estimates are going to be, that moderate improvement is going to be big enough for it to avoid a year-on-year decline in pre-tax profit, basically. And I think if it did come in around that £559 million mark, that would be a 3.8% decline year-on-year in pre-tax profit. In terms of what our clients are doing, there are still some buyers out there. It's not one-way traffic in it by any means. However, at those sort of 268 highs it's currently at, I think that's its highest price. I think it's around 10 months. Around those levels, our clients have been selling just because it's seen such an uninterrupted rise since the end of March that I guess investors and clients are looking at you know, the fact that it's going to see a year-on-year decline in pre-tax profit and things like that, and wondering if it can stay at those levels following its results on Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, if you look back, I mean, I'm going back as far as 2014, right? And the trading range here has been 280 top of the range, pretty much, and 230 bottom of the range. We're now at 270, pretty much, which is towards the top of the range. You know, if anything, you'd be, unless they knock it out of the park results-wise, which you can't see, I expect, you know, you'd be better off shorting this rather than going long, you know. So there we go. It may revert to type here. But, you know, that's unless they knock it out of the park. So, okay, anything else, Connor?
Yeah, finally, we've got IAG, you know, International Consolidated Airlines Group, you know, British Airways, Aer Lingus, Iberia, things like that. Their first quarter figures are on Friday. Again, it hit an all-time high, I think, in January. But then since February, it's been stuck in a fairly narrow trading band. It hasn't really been able to break out of between £6 and £6.25 for the last few months. Full-year figures were back in February. I think passenger revenue rose 1.6% to €20.25 billion. Total revenue was up 1.8% to nearly €23 billion. And then operating profit was up 19% to just over €3 billion, which is very, very, you know, very strong growth. Allowed IAG to announce that they're doing a €500 million euro share buyback over the next 2 years. However, none of that, you know, that those full-year figures came during the period, you know, since it's been in that £6, £6.25 trading bracket, and it didn't help it break out of those levels, despite those figures being very strong. I think there's still lingering doubt or uncertainty over the company's current restructuring plan and questions over how much long-term value that will add. I think cutting jobs at British Airways and things like that, there's still uncertainty over what exactly the end game of that is, and I think that perhaps caused a slightly muted reaction to the full-year figures back in February. In terms of its first quarter figures on Friday, I guess the big thing is Norwegian Air. You know, there's been all those reports recently that IAG was weighing up a takeover for Norwegian Air after taking a 4.6% stake in the company. And I think investors have got, you know, ideally investors are going to want some kind of clarification on that, on whether or not IAG is actually going to go over the low cost carrier with any, you know, kind of vigor. I think they're also going to see the revenue momentum from last year carry into the first quarter. Perhaps any comment on rising fuel costs. Obviously, we've seen those increase in the last month or so, on what kind of impact that's going to be having on the company.
Yeah.
You know, the company's performance this year. In terms of our clients, they've been buying in that £6, £6.25 bracket. Whether it's been buying, you know, a lot of the buying has come at the lower end of that bracket, around the £6 mark. So whether it's enough for it to actually break out, that I'm not sure. But broadly, our clients are positive around the stock at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, I know they obviously hedge a lot of their fuel ahead of time if it's cheap. So we'll have to see. But there you go. Marvellous stuff. Connor, thanks for that, fella. And we'll speak next week.
Yeah, talk to you next week. Thanks very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, UK Oil and Gas. That's UKOG. At four, Andalas Energy and Power, ADL. At three, Ascent Resources, AST. At two, Tlou Energy, TLOU. And number one, most followed company, again, is Feedback, FDBK. And of course, I've written a blog on those three times now. And they've come up with another deal today, which is very impressive. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Feedback, to your contract with Royal Papworth Hospital. And that's what I was talking about there. At four, STX Energy, spud of LMS-1 exploration well in Morocco. At three, AsiaMet Resources, 2017 annual report and financial statements. At two, Highlands Natural Resources, Phase 2 drilling at its East Denver project. And number one, most liked RNS, is from EVR Holdings. Melody VR signed 6 music license agreements. And I assume that's to progress their VR app, which should be out soon, I think. I mean, in the RNS release back early, I think it was early this month, they did say over the next couple of weeks or a few weeks, whatever, they said the app would be out. So there's anticipation there. All right, that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.